thank you for setting this up on short notice and turning out. Anybody who knows anything about black holes, please leave now. Because I don't actually know anything.
Wow.
No, you can stay. Don't make too much fun of my understanding of black holes. Because this is really about information theory, and black holes apparently are utterly incompatible with that, which is rather the point. So, well, it's joint work with Jonathan Oppenheim also, who's the one of our duo who actually does know something about black holes, and he's not here to back me up. But I'll mention him for sake of giving credit as well as covering my own black hole. So this is my cautionary tale about thinking you know too much, which I usually do. So I always think that information theory should sort of guide all the other sciences. And everything should come down to understanding things in terms of information theory. And my first day at MIT, as an undergraduate, the chemistry class, the professor put up the chart like this. It said, chemistry is the central science. And I just thought that was ridiculous. But I imagine people feel the same way about my own viewpoints. So it's, I always try and remind myself of this before expounding on how I'm right about everything, which I proceed to do usually anyway. Oh, this is an example of something where I think that information theory is really the right way to think of things. It's the Maxwell demon is really solved, and many people just don't get it, but it's an information and physics solution to this. Either you all know about and think is right, or you've never heard of, but I'm not going to explain it right now. All right, so on to the black hole information loss paradox, which probably you all know is really the biggest reason that quantum mechanics and general relativity have not been unified nicely, or at all.
So, you mean that? Is that a joke?
No, I mean that. I mean, it's the place where they just give totally different predictions and results. Because quantum mechanics is unitary, and relativity, or Hawking's calculation, is not unitary.
I disagree.
You disagree that it's not unitary?
Yes.
Did I ask you to lie? You asked me. Well, all right. It's the reason people argue about whether or not.
That's better.
Okay. I don't know if I changed what I said. Okay. So what I'm going to tell you about today is a new-ish result in quantum information theory, which we call locking. That was done as joint work with Debbie, who's here, and some other people. I will go over what I consider the information loss paradox to actually be, and then explain how locking helps solve the paradox. And then I'll tell you why it doesn't solve the paradox. I'd like to leave out step four, but sort of too honest. So the first part has got some trivial math in it, which I consider the eating our vegetables part before getting to talk about black holes, which is fun. And then by the time, because we've eaten our vegetables, by the time we get up to how locking helps, it should be totally obvious why it helps. Less obvious why it doesn't help. But then hopefully I can propose some solutions to fix the problems with the approach that doesn't solve the paradox. What I said was a paradox. All right, so classical mutual information is defined very simply. Well, I'm not going to define it, except with this nice equation. But it has the very nice property that the mutual information between two things and something minus the information between one of them and something is less than the information between the original one and something, the other one. Let me say that right. Read the equation. Here, it says it in words. It says, the additional information I get out about some random variable y by getting some extra thing z can't be any more than z told me about y. So I tell you something about y, and that's how much you found out about y. It's exactly what you'd expect. And that's really why mutual information is defined the way it is classically. The problem is that quantum mechanically it's not true. And this leads to interesting things. So I wanted to find a new kind of mutual information called the accessible information. And it's an information that two people get after starting with some quantum mechanical state. They share it in some bipartite, could be a mixed state. And then they each do some sort of measurement, resulting in a classical outcome. And those two classical random variables have some mutual information. And if I maximize that over all possible measurements they could do, I want to call that the accessible information. I want the information they can get by doing the smartest thing. And now I want to give an example of it where that classical inequality is violated. So imagine the famous BB84 states, which are the, I don't know if you're all familiar with quantum cryptography, but they are four non-orthogonal states that are used in quantum cryptography. So you can use, if anything it spins, I can use up and down, and also left and right. And these four things I can also just relabel. This is just a name with two bits. One is the basis, whether it's the up-down basis, which is the black basis, or the left-right basis. So they sort of encode two bits of information. And so I want to consider this quantum state, which is the mixed state where Bob has one of these four states, and he doesn't know which one because I'm summing all of them. And Alice has, she knows both the bit and the basis in some other orthogonal basis. Using the word basis too many times, but is this at all clear? Said classically, Alice knows what the bit is and what the basis is, and Bob just has the quantum state. And so Alice has these two bits, and Bob only has what he gets by measuring. If he can't learn anything about what basis Alice has, but if he measures in any basis he wants, he finds out the bit half the time. And so the accessible information, as easy to show, is only half of it. Nobody likes vegetables. The wrong direction. But now imagine Alice, who knows what the basis is, just sends that bit to Bob. So he now knows what the basis is. That results in this new mixed state, which is the same as it was before, except Bob also has this extra thing that tells him the basis. And he can find out the bit by just measuring in the appropriate basis. And now he has two bits. So the accessible information of this row prime is two. Well, the old accessible information was a half. The new one is two. The difference between those two is three halves. But Alice sent Bob only one bit. So more information got to Bob by sending him this one bit than the one bit contained, which is a violation by a little bit, half a bit, of the classical inequality. So without belaboring this too much, you can generalize this. And instead of having just one basis, or a two-dimensional basis, you can have a d-dimensional basis and go exactly the same way. But instead of having half a bit, it generalizes to log d bits over 2 plus 1 by sending only one bit, which is which basis to measure in, which is an arbitrarily large violation. So send one bit, and your mutual information goes up by an arbitrarily big number, totally non-classical thing. And it gets worse. In a paper that Debbie is a co-author on, along with Hayden and Peter Shore and, was it Andreas? Oh, it says on here. OK, and Winter. This is why you write things down. They showed that if you construct a state, it's very similar to the one I had before. Alice knows some basis and also some bits in that basis. And Bob gets some quantum state, but instead of just these BB84-like things, some random unitary has been applied to what otherwise was an orthogonal set of states. And you can think of these, this is the message Alice is supposed to share with Bob. This is the key, if you want to think cryptographically. And this is the encrypted message. So if Bob only knew the key, he could find out the message by measuring in the appropriate basis, but he can't. Keep in that direction. So this is what Bob would get after Alice tells him the key, which is some size. And what they showed in this paper was that if you chose the U's just completely randomly, then the dimension is big enough, namely, you choose some n that is log d cubed plus a little bit, you can get a situation where the accessible information before Alice sends the key to Bob is very small, arbitrarily small, in fact, and after is logarithmic in d, which grows slowly, but not so slowly, and it's arbitrarily large, and this is arbitrarily small. So it's a huge separation. In other words, it's like I have a little tiny key, I tell it, and before I give it to you, you know nothing. And then I tell you just a little tiny thing, and all of a sudden you know everything. And this is going to be exactly what we need to help out with black holes. We'll get to after I discuss what the paradox of black holes actually is. So quantum mechanics is unitary. It says if I start with a pure state, we're done with the vegetables, and I'll start paying attention again. If I start with a pure state, it stays pure forever. And there's some little exceptions you can argue about, like if there's a measurement. And people say, oh, there's a measurement, the wave function collapses. But I believe in the Church of the Laugier-Hilbert space, which is the idea embodied by Wigner's friend. So Wigner is doing some kind of experiment, and he gets a click. And he says, aha, I have a classical outcome, the wave function collapsed. But to Wigner, with his friend, is just an experiment itself, but it hasn't, there's been no collapse at all. That's all I mean by this. So I don't think this.
I always thought it was the friend who was watching.
I don't know. It's maybe they're both doing it to each other. You're freaking me out, man. Yeah, maybe it's a friend on it. But all of this is just to say that I don't think measurement is an example of a non-unitarity. So it doesn't fix the black hole problem by itself to say, oh, quantum mechanics isn't unitary. So the problem, of course, is that black holes are considered to be non-unitary. They're irreversible in a couple of ways. One, if I drop something into them, it isn't coming out. And that's not so bad, because it's really just a restriction on what can happen, rather than a restriction on, it doesn't say quantum mechanics is wrong, it just says some things that in quantum mechanics you couldn't do. Which, you know, super selection is like that. There's some other things that are like that. You can't undo some things, even in principle. Or you can't do some things, even in principle. But of course, it's not entirely true that things that fall and don't come out, they evaporate. And Hawking showed this and argued that they do it in a non-unitary way. The state that comes out is a thermal state with a temperature that goes with the size of a black hole. And so this is bad, because if I have a book and I drop it into, well, I let it collapse into a black hole, eventually the Hawking radiation comes out, the black hole disappears, and you get thermal radiation. So if it's gone, unitarity fails and quantum mechanics has to be wrong. But if somehow the book comes out reconstructed, then Hawking's calculation must be wrong.
What about the interior Hilbert space?
Well, there is no interior Hilbert space. It came out.
What makes you think there's none?
Well, it went poof. The black hole is completely arranged away. There's nothing.
There's another disconnected piece of space-time with the interior.
Well, you could. That's one possible but unpleasant solution. But yes, that's.
Why is it unpleasant?
Because I can just make an arbitrary number of these by going through this cycle and keep spinning off universe I.
Yes.
Well, the word universe kind of implies that there aren't more of them. It's just a matter. Well, I find it distasteful. It's certainly a possible solution, but it's hardly saying the universe is unitary if other universes that are disconnected spit off. It means our universe isn't unitary. Only the superverse is unitary or something.
But that's completely natural. If the physical process produces a space-like singularity that has the effect of giving birth to a baby in piece of the universe.
Whoa.
Right. I don't want to.
This is a matter of taste whether that's natural, but it's not. It's certainly not the only.
No, I mean it's a matter of reality whether that's what occurs.
That's a, it must be a matter of principle, but you can't find out whether it's true.
No, it's not true, because you can't find out whether that's true. It might be that sometime in the future we could discover that that is true.
This space is, by definition, completely disconnected. Well, all right, maybe it could be determined.
For example, we could look in the past.
But why don't we explore this possibility where we don't have it?
Well, all right, the conventional wisdom is that this is not the only solution. The problem. That's distasteful to some, shall we say, and completely natural to others. It's a lifestyle choice. Good. All right, so Hawking and Kip Thorne had a bet with John Preskill about this, and they wrote up this whole contract and so on. And actually, Hawking, conceded the bet eventually, although I'm not convinced that anybody understands what his new paper says, and hardly seems to really be closed. But at least they think it's closed. And
Kip has it.
Oh, Kip has it. Oh, good, good. But Hawking sent John the baseball encyclopedia. The useful information. All right, so my thought always used to be, what seemed natural to me, is, well, you know, everything looks thermal if you lose some of the Hilbert space and just, you know, haven't kept track of it yourself. If you burn something, it looks thermal. So why are black holes so special? Well, I'm trying to describe how the Hawking radiation is supposed to actually work. This is the part, well, it wasn't the earlier part, it was this part where the people that know about black holes aren't supposed to chime in. So the way I think of it, without really knowing field theory, is a or quantum electrodynamics, is that all the time these particle and antiparticle pairs are getting formed throughout space, a sort of big soup of these things. But there's a sort of a blue one with negative energy and a red one with positive energy, and usually they just meet up again because they can't exist without one another. But if it happens near the surface of a black hole and a negative energy one falls in, well then the black hole eats it, becomes lighter, and the other one can radiate away. And continue to survive, because something else accounted for the negative energy. I'm just never going to press the right button on that, ever. So since the pair production happens outside the event horizon, it seems pretty reasonable that no information about the black hole should come out from this event. It all happened here, and this thing fell in. And this particle never even interacted with the black hole, let alone should know anything about it. And you say, okay, well, then it looks random, because this is an entangled particle, and if I trace out part of it, this thing looks random. And this is kind of a reformulation of how Hawking did his calculation. And if you do this whole thing involving a cross-section of the absorption with a black hole, you can get this thermal radiation kind of thing coming out. So another way I like to think about this is to say, well, here I'm saying, because it happened out here, it can't find out anything about the hole. But I want to argue now that that's not true at all. So I always just like to think of simple things like hydrogen atoms. If I didn't learn it in the first week of quantum mechanics, you know, I still don't know it. So you have a hydrogen atom, and it just has a bunch of different energy eigenstates. And what happens when a photon is radiated by a hydrogen atom? Well, the simplified QED view is just like I had with the black hole. Some pair production happened, and a photon is absorbed by the hydrogen atom, lowering the energy level, and then the positive energy one is radiated away as light. Exactly the same thing as the black hole, and it's kind of the QED view of all radiation. And the reason it's quantized is because the system is also quantized, and it only kind of eats certain kinds of photons. If a negative energy of an inappropriate energy here, it just wouldn't interact with the hydrogen atom, and it wouldn't get reabsorbed with its mate. And so the radiation coming out knows something about the structure of the hydrogen atom. Therefore, why should it know something about the structure of the black hole as well?
Right, I'm sorry, I didn't really follow this. What is this pair production of photons? Is that what it is?
Well, maybe it shouldn't really be photons. Told you I don't want any quantum lecture dynamics. Could be a pair production of something else that then decays into photons.
And what's the negative energy state you're talking about?
Well, the two photons, or two particles anyway, one of them's negative energy, one's positive energy. They should very quickly recombine, but instead this one caused the transition in the hydrogen atom, accounting for the negative energy. Because now the hydrogen atom has less energy, and so then the other one is free to continue its life.
Could we also just think of decay from one level to another of hydrogen atom?
Yeah.
With one photon emitted?
Well, the point is, this is supposed to be exactly equivalent to that in every respect, except a slightly different explanation of what's going on. Because no one wants to think of it for a black hole, you don't want to think of the decay at levels if you don't have to. But it's reasonable to think about some pair production happening outside of the black hole. And my viewpoint is that it's not actually any different. So, good. Want to discuss that more? Or?
No, I just don't follow it, but maybe it won't matter. So
I don't know if it'll matter or not. But so why do I care if things evolve to a thermal state? How does that mess up my view of quantum mechanics? Well, it's two main things. It says that entropy gets produced. The pure state turns into a mixed state. And it also says that the final state, after the black hole evaporates, is completely uncorrelated with the initial state. Well, the second one is really the information loss paradox. Well, here's a little caveat. If I want unitarity, then I have to say Hawking's calculation is wrong and you don't get pure thermal radiation. Pure thermal radiation. Mixed thermal radiation.
Or you have to say there's a baby universe that's correlated to what came out.
If I say our universe is unitary, then I have to say Hawking is wrong. Okay. Gotta be careful with you guys. So anyway, I'm gonna assume this calculation is only true for large black holes and some asymptotic limit. And I would like any theory I have, you know, fixing that to at least kind of look like his theory for large black holes. Because that's the nice way to move science forward, is not break everything. So the hydrogen atom sort of explains away both points. I confused myself when I read this sentence a minute ago because I was thinking, it doesn't explain either, but it says the opposite. So what I mean by this is this little analogy says it explains why things evolve into mixed states, because what it says is they don't actually. The outgoing radiation knows something about the inside state of the black hole because the black hole only eats certain wavelengths. It also explains why the final state is uncorrelated with the initial state, because it says, oh, it is correlated with it. So explains is probably too strong a word. It just says, but it's a roundabout way of saying I still believe in unitarity. But this is really not satisfactory. So we'd like a better solution. And I want to say why it's not satisfactory, which is because a black hole that evaporates unitarily would have to be a quantum cloning machine. So if you draw a time slice through the black hole, this is a space-like curve, I guess, and you look at some body that collapses, forms a black hole, and then eventually radiates. And I have some quantum state that came in here, and it comes out there. You'll note that it crosses this green time slice twice, falling in, and then out here in the Hawking radiation. And so at the same time, there's two copies of the same quantum state. And quantum information can't be cloned. This is unlike classical information like sheep. The quantum information, this is sort of the core of quantum information theory, is this idea. And it also seems ridiculous to say, I insist black holes behave in a unitary way. And by insisting that, I've built something that can clone, which is non-unitary. So you can go around on that for a while, and you, as it is, you go a little crazy.
Would the one on the inside and the one on the outside be entangled with each other?
No, it's supposed to actually be the same state on a temple with one another. Well, if the theorem is that what falls into a black hole just comes back out.
Oh, it just comes out of Big Ten.
Yeah, it comes out the same. Right. It's not random. It's not thermal. It's what fell in. Then you build a cloner, which is bad. So you kind of get around this with black hole complementarity, which just says, well, you know, these two things exist at the same time, but one of them's in the black hole and one of them out of the black hole, and they can never talk to each other, so, you know, who cares? If no one can ever find out about the clone, we'll live with the pain. This is kind of the extreme opposite viewpoint, although it sounds similar to the Beta Universe one. The Beta Universe one says, it never comes out, but I don't care, it's in the Beta Universe. And this says, it does come out, and I have a clone, and I don't care, because you know, the clone is somewhere else, whatever you want to call it. But that I don't find very satisfying either. But I want to show a slight difference. I mean, black hole complementarity is not so bad. I want to talk about sort of special relativistic complementarity, which is the idea that imagine I have an event in space-time and some other event, then one and two, and it's out of the light cone, it's far away in space. Well, then there's some moving basis. I even wrote it and had to cross it out. I can't say it. There's a frame in which event one is actually after event two. But that means I ought to be able to clone if only I have something that goes faster than speed of light. Because suppose I could send information from point one to point two, then I could do something like have a clone statement, send it backwards in time, and then let it evolve forward in time, and then I would say that at the same time that the state exists twice, which is pretty much the same thing I'm saying in the black hole. If it comes out, the state exists twice at the same time. But there's still no grandfather paradox, because if I only have faster than light communication in one direction, this event can never influence this event because it's out of its light cone in the other direction. So you only have a grandfather paradox if you have two-way faster than light communication. And in the black hole, even if you have this whole cloning apparatus, you only get one-way faster than light communication, or backwards in time, or whatever you want to call it. Because you can drop things into the black hole and wait for them to come out. But what's the opposite direction of that? It's only one directional thing.
I don't get that. Why would you need faster than light communication in other directions as well? And you just try to back and mess things up and things just evolved only without.
No, because, well, see, what's happened here is the light cone of event 2 can't influence event 1. So I can't have any effect on the history of them unless I can also go faster than light in that direction.
Wait. If one is my birth, then I will intersect maybe with this light later on, and therefore have been able to kill my grandfather and...
No, but you can't intersect with your birth.
No, that's right, but I'm not to live then.
Yeah, but your world line never crosses. Your grandfather's back here somewhere. You can't get there. You can only go this way.
Grandfather has to be
past that. Yeah. So this makes me a little happier about black hole complementarity, because you get one way faster than light about both. This is all sort of an aside from what this talk is about, but it's just fun to think about. Don't laugh. All right, so this is just a sort of another viewpoint about what's going on with the black hole information, which is that the Hawking radiation, when things fall into the black hole, the information gets stuck maybe on the event horizon, whereas the mass sort of falls in and the information piles up here. When it radiates, the Hawking radiation just picks it up again and comes back out with the negative particles going in. And I don't much care for this viewpoint, but the idea is that if you think of the information as being stuck on the event horizon, it's very nice that the entropy of a black hole is proportional to the surface area, because that's how much room there is for it to pile up. All right, so the problem with complementarity despite what I just said about sort of liking it, is that it's not really satisfying because the theory doesn't tell you what happens to people that fell in the black hole. They're just gone, and they say, I don't care about them anymore. So we really want a theory that works for everybody. So how do you proceed? Well, if we want to preserve causality and have no cloning and all of that for information that really, really fell into the hole as a theory for it, we'd better insist that no information leaks out. So the baby universe idea solves that. But I want it to get out at the end. And this is the sort of the loophole this talk is supposed to be about, which is that if the information gets out at the end of the evaporation, I don't have any of these paradoxes anymore, because the black hole is some Planck scale tiny little black hole, and Hawking's semi-classical calculation surely has to be wrong. If the black hole has any kind of quantum mechanical nature at all, it should show up when it's small, something like a Planck mass. So that would completely solve the problem. You say all the information lives in the black hole until the very end of the evaporation and comes out in a big burst. But this doesn't work because it means all the information has to live in this tiny little Planck scale black hole. And you would like to have some kind of holographic principle where information can't get that dense. Because it would say that no matter how big a black hole I started with, all the information in the universe falls into this thing. And then I wait around and it can live in this tiny little speck. So that's what this says. It has to, the tiny black hole has to hold a lot of information, but we have Hawking's formula, or Bekenstein's formula, that the entropy goes like the mass squared. And so that would be violated. All right, throwing away semi-classical ideas anyway. But there's some better arguments, which essentially amount to that it would take a long time to evaporate if you had to get rid of a lot of information, or it would affect high-energy physics, or low-energy physics even. I don't want to get into that, but let's just say it's not fun to think that these tiny little remnants last for a long time and hold a lot of information. So who was paying attention before? Back to the vegetables. This is where they're supposed to pay off. So I want to sort of say exactly what I mean, what's going on here. So I want to consider some situation where Alice makes some quantum state I and drops it into a black hole. So she knows I, and then the black hole radiates for a while. And then after the black hole radiates for a while, Bob collects all the Hawking radiation and has some density matrix, which is given by some transfer function acting on the internal state that was formed the black hole. And let's imagine, based on no particularly good reason, that the action of the black hole is, all right, I'm getting ahead of what this says. So this is just saying the same thing, that Bob gets this density matrix, and this is the entire density matrix of Alice and Bob. And what I mean by preserving causality and not being able to build a corner is precisely saying that the accessible information, like I defined before, better be very small. So that whatever is radiated out while the black hole is still large, Bob doesn't know anything about. You can't clone if the information that comes out is uncorrelated with what fell in. Oh, so this is the part. Imagine, for no physical reason at all, that what black hole actually does is it does a random unitary rotation, one of n possible ones, on the infalling state, and remembers which one it did. Well, then the density matrix for Alice and Bob looks exactly like this thing I talked about a while ago. And you only have to generalize it slightly and write down the whole state for Alice, Bob, and the whole. And the point is that before I had a situation where Alice had a key and a message, and she could send the key to Bob. Well, now the only difference is the black hole holds the key. And the key is small. So the idea is that if I have this teeny little black hole, and all it contains now is this tiny logarithmic amount of information, you can have a situation where when that tiny little amount of information comes out, then all of a sudden, all the Hawking radiation that Bob has been collecting from the black hole evaporating, which looked random, stops looking random and contains all the information that ever fell into the hole. So this gets us out of the trouble that the little hole has to hold it all. The universe gets to hold all the complicated information, and the little hole just tells you the key that, that lets you find out what it was. So, you have a question?
So does that get you around the problem? I mean, the logarithm is still a monotonically increasing function.
There's other problems, but I we'll get to that. Glad you asked. So this is my slide on objections, maybe solutions. So first, there's no mechanism. Well, all right, but this locking effect works with random things. It works with almost anything. So that even if there's no mechanism, almost any mechanism ought to do it. Another problem is that some information still leaks out, exponentially small amount maybe, but it still leaks out. But that's okay. There have been various modifications of Hawking's calculation where you can tolerate a little leakage. Some of the information that can leak out is like where the black hole is. It has a position state, and you can tolerate a small amount of this, even some sublinear amount, much more than exponentially small. And finally, is your objection that the black hole still has to grow to accommodate this, and that for some d, eventually, this is going to have to be bigger than the Planck scale, and then what do you do? The whole thing breaks down. Well, what you do is you calculate how big does it have to be. And you figure out that if you have a solar mass black hole, then the dimension is 2^20 and you need part of the space, which you can encode with only 20 Planck masses, because the Planck function is really slow. And in fact, this was an idea from not as bad as the Gordon Hanna Q. I can't remember which one of the Horodesky Tom, maybe
Carol,
I think, came up with this nice idea. Said, well, maybe, I said, you know, we don't have to worry about locking any amount of information, only all the information in the universe, however big it is. So let's figure out how big that is. Well, Seth Lloyd has a paper where there's 10 to the 120th bits in the whole universe. And then you only need 40 Planck masses, because the log is so nicely slow. I have a saying that the log of anything is 3. And it's usually true. But then the Carol Horodesky's idea was, it's good to write things down, is you can turn this on its head and say, okay, let's say we know what the Planck scale is. Maybe that determines the size of the universe. If it was any bigger, then this idea wouldn't work. So I thought that was a really beautiful idea. And you really link cosmology. And it makes sense cosmology should be involved in this paradox. I think that would make you mad. Super cosmology? What is it called? Anyway, the nice thing about this is it makes a definite experimental prediction. We measure Planck's constant, we measure the size of the universe, we do some kind of complicated experiment. This was an actual experiment I performed involving lasers. I wanted to see if you had enough laser pointers, if you could get something hot. No. They're terrible. But it turns out that you can get laser pointers for 80 cents a piece at flea markets, so I bought a bunch of them. But anyway, so you can calculate this and look at experiments and you see what the results are, and you say, oh, it's very good agreement. But the problem is this logarithm thing, which actually has two logs, because the information line is another log, varies so slowly, and the logarithm thing is 3, that of course it agrees with experiment. You know, you find out, okay, the universe is somewhere between, you know, 10 to the 20th bits and 10 to the, you know, some much bigger exponent bits. It's a big deal. I proved that. So it's not much. So moving on, I want to talk about the real bug in the ointment of this whole problem. Of my whole idea with locking and why it doesn't really work. And the problem is that locking, and it's not a general relativity answer or even a deep quantum mechanics answer. It's just that the locking phenomenon is sort of very weak. It sounds very strong. It does this thing where a logarithmic amount of information can lock this exponentially large amount of information. But the problem is, well, let me go through this. So what happens when one of these random unitaries is done on a state? Well, it maps it into some cone in the d-dimensional space. The original state was here, and some small number of unitaries was done to it. And if the number of states in the cone is a lot smaller than the size of the whole space, then the chance that two random states overlap is very small. And we want n to go by log d cubed, so you know it is small. But the problem is, the chance of two states overlapping isn't what I need. So worry about it. What I need to worry about is whether, and that would be true if I was only ever dropping one bit into a black hole. But I have to worry about all the bits I drop in. And so if you do this calculation right, it's a pretty standard information theory thing where you make little balls. And so the sphere is covered by a whole bunch of cones, depending on how many bits you encode. And you end up with this relation that the log of the dimension of the space that the sphere is minus the size of this key equals the log of the number of encoded states. And this is, in fact, exactly the classical bound that I was just telling you you could violate. And so this is the packing lemma it's due to in the Gordeau tag. Well, the point is, if I try to encode too much information, then the locking stops working and it all leaks out.
What does overlapping have to do with not working? I mean, what's the point of overlapping?
Well, the point is, if they're not overlapping, they're distinguishable. So as soon as they start being overlapping, then I confuse myself.
You mean they're distinguishable if you know which unitary you get.
Right. Yeah, if I know the key, they're distinguishable.
You're telling me that if they happen to overlap, then the key doesn't work.
If I try and pack too many things in there, then
it doesn't turn in the lock.
Or are you saying that the unlocking process is unstable?
Well, it's in a certain sense, it's not robust. It's a.
I mean, that's what you would expect, right? Because there's such a little key to unlock. So much. How can that be?
No, I'm saying it backwards. Take it back. I'm totally saying it backwards. Let me back up. The point is, I can pack a whole lot of things in that aren't overlapped. This is what I confuse my. And what the locking was supposed to say, they don't become distinguishable. And this says there's a way to pack them so that they are distinguishable. It's just that it's not a random way. I totally said this, but I apologize. So the point is that if I were to pick very carefully which states I drop into the black hole, then because of this packing lemma, I could find out what they were without even knowing the key. What it means to not overlap means even without knowing the key, I could find out which cone I'm in. And that means the information wasn't really locked. If I just drop random things in, it will be and everything works. But if I pick an error-correcting code and drop states in, then I can build a cloner and have all the violations I was trying to avoid. That was what I was trying to get at with this. And so what locking is not robust to coding. So it's too good to be true in a certain sense. And in fact, that sort of makes me feel better about locking, because it was such a strong result, and it seemed like it was too good to be true, and in this way it is. Well, that wasn't so bad. So that kind of just makes the whole thing not work, and I wanted to discuss a couple of possible repairs, which I call mule rescue, which comes from Charlie Bennett was going to the Grand Canyon and hiking down the bottom, and he realized that there was a sign that says, only hike down here if you're really up to it, because mule rescue is expensive and not always available. So it's come to me, rescuing the theorem with way more work than you want to do and making it much more ugly. So if you want to be able to really worry about cloning and in this black hole complementarity sense, what you're really worried about is if two people can have the quantum state at the same time. And to do this coding thing that this previous slide was about, there has to be a code book. And so the code book has to be in the black hole along with somebody who's in the black hole if they want to have the clone and have it be useful. If they don't have the code book, then they don't know what the state is. Kind of like the error correcting code protects the state from the black hole's evolution, but it also protects it from the guy who fell into the black hole who's trying to look at it. And the code book, in general, has to be a very large dimension, so it won't fit in the black hole. And so if you ponder this long enough, you can convince yourself this thing maybe still works. But I couldn't convince my co-author, and I haven't really convinced anybody else. So this is sort of an idea for future work. So the conclusions are, well, the locking effect solves everything except that it doesn't. But at least the original idea that has been put forth, that the reason information, I mean, that the reason that quantum mechanics can't really apply to black holes is that the information would have to be in a small black hole. That's just simply false. The locking problem idea might not solve everything, but at least you can't just say small things can't hold a lot of information, and therefore the information is on the outside, which is not true. So future work is to try to symmetrize the locking so I don't need a mechanism. Maybe lock other forms of information, which people have worked on and showed some other than the accessible information. There are other kinds of quantum information, and there's been a lot of work on that actually since I made this talk. And try to solve this problem with coding and sort of hope that this points the way towards having a full quantum gravity. End of slideshow. Click to exit. Arguments, questions?
Well, somewhere in between.
This
code book, what happens to it when the black hole evaporates?
Oh, well, the point is that the person inside the black hole, if they want to be able to read the clone state, has to have the code book. The code book could be some classical thing made up of orthogonal states. It could literally be a book. But a code book for a random code would have to be huge. If it's encoding an n-dimensional state, it would need to have n-dimensional states of its own to write them all down, and several of them, like a bunch.
But where is this code being applied?
By the person inside the black hole who was supposed to have a clone.
Yeah, but how did the state get encoded in this code in the first place?
Well, the point is, coding screws up the locking, so Alice very carefully, before she drops the stuff into the black hole, picks a random code and drops it into the black hole, but that's only a clone in the black hole if it could be decoded in the black hole.
But you might have a...
But nobody says it has to be a random
code.
But right. That's why it kind of doesn't work, for a reason. And then you get to say really cool things, and this gets even more crazy and speculative. You say, well, okay, any code book for a random code, for a non-random code, that can be described by a small program, you could drop into the black hole, and it would be fine. Or, you know, it would break the locking. Maybe black holes are nefarious, and they exactly know algorithmic information theory. And so then any short program is exactly ruled out by what they do in their random-looking unitary evolution. So that would get into this mess of cosmology and made-up physics. Also, you get, like, Chaitin's ideas in there.
It seems like we've...
Well, that seems totally unreasonable to me, but it'd be really cool.
Well, I wonder if you can pull that out just by counting the number of short codes that would have to, or codes with short descriptions.
Well, there's not very many. They have short descriptions.
Well,
that's exactly.
But there's probably still too many for this. I mean,
I don't think so.
Because since there's a gap kind of between the. The kind of the usual information theoretic bound on encryption and the locking bound, the lock, when you could have, you know, square root of n or something.
Yeah, something like that could happen. But I think it's so unreasonable that the black hole would really know to be nefarious in this way anyway that it's probably not even worth figuring out. More questions? Yeah.
Do you have any references to your argument that a black hole could be used for cloning if it contains information about the original state? Like, it seems to me, if you construct a pair, right, and they're entangled,
You throw one into the black hole, and it comes out again. That's not cloning, that's just, I mean, it's as though you took the other half of the pair and put it into the other room and brought it back. There's no potential for cloning.
Well, right? But they existed at the same time in different places.
They existed at the same time, at the same place, just like any entangled pair. Different places at the same time, just like any entangled pair. And they contain the same information, but because they're entangled...
They're not entangled. It's a tensor product of the same state twice.
But how? But I don't see why that would be the case, just because it crossed a black hole horizon. But I mean,
it starts off, so your pair comes apart, it's a tensor, it's entangled.
Well, do you see it? Let me go back
half
to this.
Half of it goes into the black hole, it's still entangled,
yeah,
and then the other half comes out.
But half an entangled state doesn't look like the original state, half an entangled state looks like a thermal state.
That's true. And so if while the other half is in the black hole, if you just consider half of it, it looks like a thermal state, which is exactly the
No, that's the answer to your question. If half gets out, the other half, it was inside the black hole. I'm not trying to answer how it comes out. What I'm saying is, if it does come out, it seems much more reasonable that it comes out unchanged rather than somehow going from being entangled to being a tensor product. I mean, by any physics that we know, right?
Well, that's the paradox. I'm not quite sure. The point is, one version of it says one thing has to happen, and the other one says it can't happen. But let me show you this one again. So this, the idea was, if I can send something faster than the speed of light, do you agree I have a clone? I take a quantum state here, send it here, it's back in time, and then I let it go forward in time just by sitting there, and then in these two places I have the same state. It's not entangled, because it's worldwide. As I picked it up, I put it in a box, I sent it here, and then let it sit until it got there. So the same state exists at two places at the same time.
Could you show the previous slide?
I don't agree that at any point you have gone from one copy of a state to two copies of the same state.
It's unfair,
you
just
throw it
back at them. Just the same future.
Yeah, if you could travel back in time to an hour ago and then sit down in that chair and wait, eventually we'd see two of you. And that's cloning. That's the worst kind of cloning.
If you assume that you can travel back in time, then you can.
But I'm saying that things escaping across an event horizon of a black hole is equivalent to doing that.
Could you show us the diagram that shows that again?
Well,
no, the previous one.
It's back away. Want this forward and back reverse times crazy thing.
Yeah, that's
this. Right, well, so I don't quite know why the time space looks like this, but the general relativity people say you can draw it this way.
I'm not convinced that that's about the time space.
Right?
Yeah,
I
mean,
I don't get it either, but every time I ask somebody who knows general relativity really well, they say you can draw it like this.
So, sure, but you're. The time going becomes space-like,
yeah.
Inside the horizon.
Right, that's what's...
So why do you say it's the same time?
No, but I'm talking about right here, which is before it fell in. That's one copy of the state, and the other one is out here, outside the black hole. And it's at the same time.
I don't know. Well, on a Penrose diagram, I'll believe it.
Well,
it seems as though the essence of your argument is that north of the...
Good, somebody can do this. Well, sweet.
It seems like the essence of your argument is that in order for a black hole to evaporate, in order for anything to come out, it has to travel faster than the speed of light. Is that what you're saying?
Well, or it better wait.
Like that, you can clone and do all this stuff.
Right. Or it better wait till the end when the black hole is Planck scale and the event horizon may not mean as much. Right. But for a big black hole to evaporate, you want the event horizon to mean something. Oh, well, here we go.
So
I've
got
fault
on the black hole.
Yeah.
Quantum radiation comes out. This is a copy of state. This is a copy of state. This is a space light.
But you're just, okay, I don't understand the physics that causes that problem.
Well, yeah, that's
well,
the point is that if you want to say that there's information, that this original state is coming out in quantum radiation, well, you should also say, because this is, you know, low curvature region, that the thing falling in doesn't see any difference, so there should also be a copy falling in.
And okay. Therefore, you can draw space-like slice that has seems to have two copies of it.
Yeah,
but I mean, Hawking radiation information that you will only gather at scry infinity.
That's right.
So in order for this to be a good thing to do, you have to go to very late times, and that's the argument behind black hole complementarity, that at very late times, this is not a picture that really makes sense.
Yeah. But the other half of this is that at least I'm happy that there's no paradox at all unless you have this kind of conic problem. Because the other things, like the radiation looping thermal or getting out at all, that just doesn't bother me. Because of like this hydrogen atom idea and things like that. That if black holes are quantum, it's natural for the information to get out. Except for the conic problem.
I mean, the point is that the black hole, that compared to a burning moth or whatever it was here, burning book.
Well, that's what has information in it. And amazingly, you can find a lot of people who are into burning books if you Google for that.
The point is that there's a causal issue here because of the
horizon. Yeah. You have a question? Or are you nodding? You're ready to go? No? All right. Thank you.